So, are you one of them? She has excellent posture, a quiet inner steel, an aversion to departures from home on a Sunday evening. She sleeps with the window open all year round, hates cauliflower cheese, and still uses the adjective super, decades after it went out of fashion. Aged anywhere between 55 and 100 plus, she has a bicycle with a basket, arranges flowers in churches, manstalls at charity fairs, and carries recyclable bags to the supermarket. Thrift is her middle name. She probably went to an all-girls boarding school, and today I'm talking to the author who has what has been described as the funniest book of the year. It's called Terms and Conditions, Life in a Girls' Boarding School, 1939 to 1979. Welcome, Isenda Maxtone Graham, who's here to talk about her book on Radio Gorgeous. Hi.
Hello, very, very nice to speak to you. Very nice. And yes, life in girls' boarding schools, in the plural, because of course I talk about lots of them, from very well-known ones to utterly unfamous ones that down some gravel drive in Shropshire in the 1940s that closed down, you know, closed down through lack of pupils in the 1970s. A huge range.
So why 1939 to 1979?
Well, I wanted it to be in living memory because my favourite thing is to go and speak to people and actually face-to-face and ask them and their memories. And through these chats, it's the wonderful small details that come out. So I thought start with the beginning of World War II and end in... Well, Thatcher and the duvet seemed to come in at about the same time. For me, I wasn't interested in writing about boarding schools when they had duvets, which were lovely, warm, cosy, fluffy things. This was the days before comfort.
Before people started caring,
before
really.
People started caring remotely how comfortable happy girls were.
So just to let you know, I fully fit your remit. I was expelled from my boarding school, Harrogate College, in summer of 79. Mm. We lived on a diet of buns, polony and dried egg. We played lackey and everyone had crushes on each other. And when I arrived, there was supervised bullying. So why do you think the book has been so popular? Because you've told me it was a bestseller in Chelsea at the moment.
Yes, I do. I think that it is... I think people... I wonder, particularly at the moment when all this, the world has gone slightly mad with Trump and where's Brexit going, people really somehow love this sort of charming, rather innocent world before everything was all about me, me, me. In those days, it really wasn't. Daughters were often second-class citizens compared to sons, and they were loved, but they were sent off to these. Institutions and I think people find it fascinating to have their own pasts shown back to them. I haven't got an agenda. It's not one of those boarding school survivors books all about the unbelievable misery and bullying, although there are instances of terrible bullying in the book and terrible homesickness. But there's also, I mean, my general feeling is that the people who went to these places are in fact not damaged. Mostly they're tough and sense, got a great sense of humour, and there are just so many stories that people...
So you think it's actually character building, exactly what they thought it would be. What about the angle of making us into ladies? Let's go into that. How did they try and do that?
Well, they had deportment competitions where you had to walk round and round the cell bit of grass. There was one school in Malvern where this happened, and it was an elimination round. So after every circuit, a few girls were eliminated from the deportment competition, and the last one standing won the prize.
Also, I don't think actual teaching was very good, but you said there was a lot of teaching about cookery and sewing. I mean, personally, I had that, and I've actually found that really useful in life, to be honest.
I suppose that's true, exactly. I mean, some the very posh schools, you'd have thought people wouldn't need to learn about cooking and sewing because they would never have to do any. But actually, it was thought of those days that you had to know how to do things just in case your servants weren't doing it right, and you had to at least tell them how they should be doing it.
Now, that's what I want to focus on, because I thought really posh people had private tutors, you know, like the Queen did and Queen and Princess Margaret. But why did it change sort of post-war? Why did people decide not to do homeschooling but to send them out?
Maybe that just things were changing by then, and this that atmosphere of, as you say, governesses was gradually eroding during and after the war, with women working more and just being together with other people more. Quite a lot of the women I spoke to were privately educated till the age of 8 or 9, and then sent away.
So that was a massive shock, wasn't it?
Well, imagine that, exactly. In the way, the wonderful excitement of leaving some bossy governess and going to, at its best, it could be a marvellous liberation. At its worst, it could be horrifying to be taken away from one's home garden and playing with the gardener's sons, sent to these a terrifying, freezing cold, drafty establishment.
So can you describe, you've just started describing the schools. What were they like?
Well, the first thing people noticed was you were never allowed on the main stairs. That was always a bit of a shock for the first night. I have got a chapter called The New Girl's Surprise, where of course, lots of girls had read Angela Brazil and had a wonderful romantic idea of what the schools were like. I don't want to completely disabuse people of that, because there was some romance. And there's a whole chapter called Some Rural Idylls, which is about wonderful places, beautiful, stately homes where the girls could run wild in the spinney and sleep in Elizabethan bedrooms and all that. But all too often it was in some nasty, rather sort of golf club house looking horror of a house on the outskirts of Ascot or Southampton or
kind of Edwardian
Torquay,
pile.
An Edwardian pile, where you went in, the smell of cabbage hit you, the sort of lavatory tiles on the back stairs, and you weren't allowed on the main stairs, lino-floored dormitories in beds, iron beds in rows, and terrifying bed-making rules.
Yes. Now, that was one thing I remember, that hospital corners. Do you know how to do one?
Oh, I still do them. Although I must admit, have fitted sheets on my own bed, and I feel guilty every time. I think my matron would not have approved of that. But I definitely do. And I used to take great pride in the hospital corners.
Well, was another thing that you weren't allowed. Did you have a thing on your dressing table? You weren't allowed many things on it, five items.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Two photographs. And I said in the book that, some people are brave enough to bring in a six-sided photo cube, which broke the two photographs rule. I thought, how did they dare to do that? And we allowed two cuddly toys, soft toys, and one eiderdown. Exactly. It was all absolutely terrifying. And I was quite fascinated by the rules in a way. I remember quaking with terror.
Let's talk about uniform, because uniform was, I remember it being scratchy. I just don't remember it being, but actually I love the second-hand uniform because it'd been a bit worn.
Oh, that's true.
It might have been made in the 1930s or 40s, a bit more stylish, because when I was there, I'd just bring in the crimpoline.
Yes, that stiff, horrible, stiff, itchy stuff. Yeah. And I think that, Anne Heseltine, who I interviewed, was just her worst memory was of the Lisle stockings, horrible, itchy clothes, and one of the great joys was casting those off at the end of summer term and not having to touch them for 2 months in the summer holidays.
I want to talk about knickers. Come on.
Oh, yes, knickers.
Did you have knicker linings and knickers on top?
We had, no, just because we were 1970s, we had winter pants and summer pants.
Okay.
Very much different. But lots of people I interviewed had these.
I was 70s and I still had knicker linings.
Oh, did you? Yes.
Yeah.
So knicker lines, and then you put on this sort of
big
over them, like more like bloomers.
Flannel, green ones over.
It's unbelievable, exactly. Yeah. That's abiding memory. Mm. And of course the elastic went, and you had this terrible sense of having to, pull them up. And terrible rules about, and how rarely they went to the wash. I mean, this terrible thing about sort of knickers going to the wash once a week. I mean, these were, girls didn't question. That's one of the things I came across. The girls just didn't question these things that happened to them.
Well, it wasn't a time when people thought you can sort of question things like that, did they? It's a mentality now. Nowadays, schools are terrified of parents. Mm. Whereas then, can you tell us the relationship between the parents and the school, what it was?
I think they might have looked at a directory and found the school in Matlock with healthy air, sent the daughter, probably hardly even went to look round.
Sent by train, probably.
Yeah, sent along by train, and parents, never visited, never came to watch a match, ever. They might have visited for half term once a year, and taken you to a local hotel, and you had an embarrassing conversation with your parents in the hotel lobby.
Do you think it's that people thought they were jolly lucky to be there? These people were Edwardians. Mm. They'd been through two wars, the parents. Mm. They probably just think, well, good on you, old girl,
I suppose that's right, and that's why there was obligatory letter writing every single Sunday, if not more often. And I have noticed that girls always said they were having a lovely time, even if they weren't, because they didn't want, very sensitively, didn't want their parents to think that they they weren't happy. They knew their parents were paying money to send them to there.
But also, wasn't there a rule that you couldn't say you're unhappy because the matron or the housemistress would look at your letters?
Absolutely. There was a lot of censoring going on. Mm. Exactly. I've mentioned one nun who carried a censor, as I say, incense, and also was a censor of letters, so double censor. Awful. So exactly, you couldn't get away with saying things because you had to leave the envelopes non-stuck down.
Were the places homely at all? Did people find places that they could feel kind of safe and warm and cosy?
On the prospectuses, they often had a picture of really cosy drawing room and girls sitting at the knee of the headmistress with a blazing log fire and a Labrador on the floor. This was often, I'm afraid, not borne out by reality. A friend, some have said that only in the 3-day week when there were power cuts did they at last get to go and sit in the lovely drawing room, which was totally out of bounds. Yes, the word out of bounds was very common. And there were...
Why do you think the schools were so kind of, was it based on kind of, what principles was it based on? The same thing as sort of Gordonston or something? Mm. Why were we treated like this?
I think it was just this philosophy of it not being all about you. And there was a toughening up thing. I mean, this whole thing about having to eat everything on your plate was part of that. Even for no reason at all. I mean, was it Liz Forgan who couldn't bear sugar on her porridge? She liked salt because she was Scottish. And World War III broke out, she told me. World War III broke out because they would not bend the rules.
Yeah, that's it. Being different was impossible.
Yes, you had to conform in that style, and B, with girls, girls wanted to conform in order to be not to be unpopular, which is another matter of the conforming urge.
Tell us about relationships then. Mm. What about like pashas and romances and crushes?
Yes.
For people that didn't go to boarding school, they might think this is quite weird. Yes. Can you explain further?
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's a whole chapter called Pashas, Romances and How Babies Come, which is the sex education or lack of it in these schools. But the pashas were, people say, a healthy way of sort of bringing the world of rapture into this rather drab world of cabbage and lino floors. Young girls were expected to develop a passion for older sixth form girls, usually the rather beautiful, lithe, hockey-playing Amazons. And you said to the older girl, please, do you mind if I have a pash on you? And she'd say, OK, then. And then you'd turn down her bed at night and you'd empty her waste paper basket for her and leave a strawberry on her pillow from your vegetable garden. Nothing remotely sexual.
You'd even write to her, though, wouldn't you?
Write poems to her, definitely, yes, write poems to her eyebrows. And sonnets about her. But it was, you know, I think it was all innocent. It was just a sort of outlet for
emotion. Just think girls, particularly hormonal girls, going to have a lot of feelings, you know, and where do they put
exactly.
them?
Exactly. There were no men about the place apart from the one undergardener, perhaps. So where are you going to put your emotions if you can't have passions? And I think it was a sort of education in unrequited love, as I said, because the whole point was it was not requited and shouldn't be requited and never would be.
Now, I want to say, you said there wasn't anything about lesbianism. You must have come across a bit.
So I certainly did, exactly.
Was that more the staff?
Mm, yes, I mean, I think it probably happened a bit with both. And some staff, I mean, I have said, some lovely headmistress allowed two girls to sleep in the same bed because she wanted them to develop their relationship. Maybe, I don't know.
Or maybe she was so innocent she didn't realise.
Yes, or maybe she was up to it herself. I really, I mean, there were stories of.
Especially our games teachers were definitely gay. My housemistress was gay, you know, and we didn't use the word gay then,
exactly, and good for them. Really. I
mean, but we never ever judged them. We would say we'd laugh and say they're leses, but we didn't mind.
No, exactly, and in a way, perhaps we were very more liberal than we are now. And that's perhaps rather wonderful. But, I mean, you can see these women living all their lives in an all-female environment.
But in a way, they had to go and live in an all-female environment because where else could they live out their lives?
Mm, exactly. And because of that, in a way, they were dead devoted at their best. They were devoted to their job and their vocation of teaching girls. And some of the best ones were amazing women who were not distracted by family life of their own.
And also because these were the women who were singled out in the First World War and didn't get married because they were, you know, there weren't enough middle-class men to go around. So can you tell us about the spinsters that ran the schools?
You do get that sense that there were ones who'd had lost a fiancé in the war. And for better or for worse, it could turn them into desiccated old sticks or into absolutely lovely, devoted, dedicated, kind people. And the terrifying Miss Creed and Miss Richards at a horrible school called... Beaufront, absolutely example of the terrifying brand. I think perhaps they were a couple and they were just cruel and they had squeaky, horrible shoes that squeaked along the corridors and billowing cardigans and were really quite psychologically sadistic.
Can you describe their bosoms, please?
Oh, yes, exactly. I did hear my interviews describing women who either had bosoms out to here or bosoms down to here. And I hardly need to...
I remember the down to here ones.
The down to here ones. I'm just wondering which is worse, really. Out to here suggesting sort of great stoutness, down to here suggesting sagging of self-esteem and sagging of bosoms. And I think perhaps down to here is rather worse.
Let's talk about sport, because sport was another outlet for girls. What did you come across sports-wise?
Well, I did. I mean, Roedean and St Leonard's seemed to be the, and Benenden perhaps seemed to be the great sporting schools, and Wickham Abbey. There was a lot of it about at the more sort of there were schools called boys, girls public schools, which are sort of more based on boys public
kind of
schools.
The higher end ones.
They really were trying to, with colleges and houses and almost with fagging as well. Those were the ones that were very sporty, and lacrosse was started by one of the St Leonard's teachers who went to Canada. It was a bad day for the unsporty ones among us, and saw a lacrosse match going on. The first away match was between St Leonard's and Brighton, 550 miles away. They had to travel a long way for that away match. Wow. But the girls who didn't like games, of course, had to suffer from hours and hours on the pitches.
Exactly.
And of course, some parents just didn't care. There's a whole chapter about how little parents cared about, you know, getting the right fit of school for their daughter. So you could find a really aesthetic girl being sent to a terrifyingly sporty school and having to suffer that.
I totally agree with that, because I'll never forget the liberation of meeting a family who'd said they'd looked at each of their children and sent them to different schools. My family,
yes,
we just weren't. You went to the same school.
Yes,
and
whatever
it just,
you were,
yeah,
like. That's, yeah, what it was like in those days. And nowadays, yeah, we spend, you know, with the, yeah, insomnia that goes on, choosing the perfect school for our daughter. It's just not heard of in those days.
But I suppose, as I say, they were the get on with it generation. And also, they were busy having drinks parties. They were so happy the war was over.
There's a lovely description of some girl being late back to school. Poor thing. Late back to St Mary's Ascot. And because her parents were at the 4th of June, the Eton, Great Eton event, and suddenly it was 4 o'clock, 4:30, and she had to get back by 5:30. And the parents opened the boot and got out the gin, the wine, the whiskey, started having a massive drinks party. And that's what parents were.
Yes, there was a lot
of that going on.
I know, because that's what my grandparents, both sets were like.
Yes.
What's the most poignant story that moved you, Ascender, when you were writing this?
Good question. There was a girl who got off the train and there was no mother there to collect her. There's sort of so unattentive were the parents that you could have these terrible moments of girls just not being collected. Jocelyn Dimbleby had a very happy time at school, but just her description of her missing of her mother, just longing to feel the rustle of her evening dress as she came to kiss her goodnight. And she was in Damascus, miles away, married to another second husband with a new baby, and just that sense of how far away you could feel. Some very sort of sad stories of bullying. Yes, the divorce classroom at Down House, where if the girls suddenly decided they didn't like you anymore, there was a classroom with two doors. You went into, it was called 4B, and you were summoned into 4B and through one door, and all your people who had been your friends flounced out through the other door, and from that moment you were an outcast. And people have said that, you know, they never got over it.
No, I think school, it's kind of hand in hand with humiliation, isn't it?
Well, it's behind these, you know, it's behind behind closed doors along gravel drives, miles from anywhere. When the days before mobile phones, no one really was keeping an eye on what went on, and only by being there could you really know the truth.
So tell me about, how did you have the idea of writing this book?
I did write it for Slightly Fox, which is a quarterly magazine. I wrote about Angela Brazil girls' school stories for them, and I had such a lovely time reading those early novels written about the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And thought, gosh, I'd love to write about the reality of that world, and suggested it to Slightly Fox, and they said, yes, do. And so I just started, and met a lovely woman who'd been to Longstow Hall before the war, and I sort of found out from there, everyone telling me, you must meet so-and-so, and you must go to so-and-so, and have you heard of this strange school? And it was
so it kind of evolved without you even trying.
Well, I do love that kind of book, because it just grows organically on its own, really.
And tell me about Slightly Fox, then.
Well, it was founded by Gail Perkis and Hazel Wood, who used to work at John Murray and started their own publishing house, first of all, to publish four quarterly magazines where you write about the books you love, which I often write for. I love writing for them. And then they started producing these beautiful cloth-bound hardbacks with ribbon ribbon markers, absolutely exquisite, really produced, printed in Yorkshire by Smith Settle. And mostly it was reprints of old favourites. And I'm one of their few living authors.
Fantastic. And how many reprints have you had so far?
Well, so far we're onto the fifth reprinting.
And so, it only came out in November.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
you're sitting on a success.
amazing.
This is so brilliant.
Yes, well, I just love the fact that it struck a chord.
Tell me about the response you've had then.
I mean, every day I get a letter from somebody saying, just thank you so much. I think some people have found it the funniest book they've ever read. Some people have found it the saddest book they've ever read.
And that's it sad. Yeah. I didn't. Mm. It was because someone gave to me saying, I've heard this is really funny, but gave to me at Christmas, and I found it very sad.
Yeah, no, it's a real mixture. I didn't try to wring the heartstrings too much because, you know, there have been books about, you know, just awful books about the unbelievable
horror. I think it just brought back so many memories for me, and I didn't have a good experience.
No, didn't you
school.
Not? No, exactly. No. So I think people have said that, you know, expecting to be rolling on the floor, that actually more in tears.
Yeah,
because people's memories are so raw, and that's the lovely thing about talking to people face to face. They really.
So how do you do it? Do you record like me?
Or? Actually, I scribble. I scribble. I do instant editing. By scribbling, and which is, seems to be
And that works for you.
It does work for me. I know whatever works for me. Yeah, that's right.
So tell us about your boarding school experience. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I mean, I remember it so vividly, but that it must have been traumatic, you know, because it is a traumatic memory.
Where
you remember.
Did you go?
Well, I went to Sipton Park in Kent.
Does it still exist?
No, it didn't. It closed in the 1990s, and good riddance, in some would say. But no, I mean, I made some lovely friends there, but I still remember the terrifying matron on the first night saying, just hearing her saying to another girl, "How dare you?" And that, I mean, you know, having come from a nice, friendly, lovely, gentle home where just no one said that to me, I was absolutely terrified.
So you played ball then, didn't you, at school?
Oh, you just had to go along with it.
Did the opposite.
What did you
rebel? I had 3 weeks when none of the school spoke to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had to sit on high, which was its own little table in the dining room for a whole term, eating on my own, everybody watching me. You know, I mean, I've been deeply humiliated. But guess what it's given me? Strength.
Has it?
Yeah.
And
totally.
A sense and a longing for revenge.
Yeah.
Slightly.
But the main thing is I just don't give a damn now.
No.
You know, it's made me give me this, you know.
Well, I do think that can be a good thing for life. It can say, whatever it does, it can set you up for a sort of rather self, not self-obsessed, but, you know, just getting on with it.
Yeah, exactly. And how did it hinder or help you boarding school?
Well, I did. My parents then sent me to co-educational schools in my teens. They'd sort of seen the effect it was having.
Gosh, so they were quite liberal.
They were quite liberal. Yeah. They sort of
looked, where did they send
beyond.
You?
First Dover College and then King's Canterbury, in fact.
But did you like those schools?
Yes, I mean, there was a bit of a shock in their different ways.
Well, boys are given so much more freedom. It's so unfair because they think of us as little flowers we can't let. And they mustn't, imagine our virginity mustn't go.
No,
that
exactly.
must be the main worry, you know.
I mean, one girl who went to a boys' prep school because her father happened to teach there and was allowed to slither along the corridors and run up the stairs three at a time. When she first went to Cheltenham in 1950, late 40s, 50s, she couldn't believe the unbelievable silence. You were never allowed to run.
We had to walk to all our meals and
was that such an important thing? I mean, she was better educated at the boys' school than she, you know, just as well educated at the boys' school than she was at the girls' school. Why do they have to have these ridiculous
petty,
rules?
Petty.
Yeah, there's something strange about having to keep the lid on women. There's some strange thing about
that. And that obviously makes women, it brings out the...
Yes, it does really. It doesn't really do good in the end.
But it does, because tell us about someone you've met since you've written the book and it's affected you.
Well, someone
who's read the book and they've come to you.
Well, I've had good and bad. You know, some people say, "May I pick you up on certain?"
That's annoying.
I've had a few of those. Rather like yes, exactly.
You got that fat wrong.
Exactly, quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, they some have said it's. I mean, one St Mary's Ascot girl said, "Thank you, it was healing. I just feel I've had my whole childhood's been redeemed. Thank you for explaining it to me, for showing me what it was. It's been cathartic." So I do think that you know, there is something. People have their past shown back to them and show what they, you know, what they went through and how did we get through it? And they did.
So it's terms and conditions, life in a girl.
In the plural.
You can say
yes. Terms and conditions. Well, rather good punning title, maybe. Life in girls' boarding schools, 1939 to 1979.
Published by
Slightly Foxed.
Thank you so much for coming on to RadioGorgeous.com.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.